Jim Irwin is lunar module pilot for the mission of Apollo 15. And this is your first flight into space, isn't it, Jim?
Yes, it is.
And you've been here in Houston in the astronaut program for how long?
Oh, a little over 5 years.
Uh-huh. And what have you been doing? What have been your assignments? You've been on some backup crews, and you've had some other things that have gotten you well into this Apollo machinery, haven't you?
Yes. After we went through the basic indoctrination course or education program for basic astronauts, I was assigned to LEM test article number 8, LTA 8.
Which you went in the big vacuum chamber for quite a while with that, didn't you?
Yeah. So that took almost a year of my time.
Mm-hmm.
Checking that vehicle out and running the thermal vacuum test for the lunar module.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I was assigned as a support crew for LEM, Apollo 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then the backup crew for 12, and now the prime crew for 15.
You went through all of the training that Pete Conrad and Al Bean and Dick Gordon went through for their second lunar landing, didn't you? So that, and then a prime training cycle for Apollo 15. That gets you really ready to go, I bet.
It sure does. The training as a backup crewman is really great.
Jim, what part of the country do you come from originally in the United States?
Well, I was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Lived there for about 11 years. And then we moved to Florida, and I lived at in a little town on the west coast of Florida, Newport Richey,
mm-hmm.
for a little over a year. And then we moved to Orlando, lived there for a couple years, and then my family decided they'd like to move out west, so we picked up and we moved out to Oregon.
And you're really a product of the whole country, aren't you?
That's right.
Did you grow up in Oregon, go to school out west?
No, lived in Oregon for really less than a year, and then we moved to Salt Lake City. And lived there for about 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I finished high school in Salt Lake City.
Then you went to the Naval Academy, didn't you?
Yes.
How did a Naval Academy graduate end up in the Air Force?
Well, fortunately, about that time, the Air Force was a new organization that just started. And they were looking for to build up their officer corps. And they were taking more graduates from West Point and Annapolis.
Mm-hmm.
To build up their officer corps. So I had the opportunity of going with the Air Force and going into flight training immediately. So I jumped at the opportunity.
Tell me about your flight experience before you came to NASA.
Well, I went, of course, to the flight training and then to a squadron, a fighter squadron. Went to graduate school and then I was able to go to the test pilot school.
Mm-hmm.
Test pilot school at Edwards.
In California.
Then I was assigned to a test project. Then had a chance to go through the aerospace research pilot course out there, which was a space course, space-oriented education.
Mm-hmm.
And then assigned to another test pilot slot after that.
Mm-hmm. May we ask you how old you are now?
41.
And you have quite a rooting section there at home, don't you?
Yeah, I have... Four little ones.
Four children?
Yes.
Any potential astronauts in the bunch?
I don't know whether I can really get Jimmy interested in it or not. He'd rather drive race cars, I'm afraid.
They'll be home rooting for you during this mission, I'm sure, though.
Yes.
Okay, Jim Irwin, good luck throughout the flight, and thanks for telling us a little about your background. Jim, this is going to be one of the most interesting landings in the whole Apollo program. You're coming in over a mountain range some 9,000 meters high. I've heard the figure 9,800 meters. You're going down into this horseshoe-shaped crescent surrounded by mountains, and then you're supposed to land within 2 kilometers of a rill or canyon. Is that a pretty good challenge to you, is that lunar module pilot over there as you come down?
It's going to be a challenge to both Dave and myself. Of course, he'll be flying it in for the landing.
Tell us what you do during that descent and touchdown period.
Well, I have the responsibility of looking at all the systems in the LEM, including the guidance computer, and relaying this information to Dave so that he can concentrate on the out the window view, looking at the landing.
You won't have much time to look out the window.
Unfortunately, I won't have much time to look out. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be giving him... critical parameters, such as telling him what angle the computer is shooting for, and so he can look out the window and decide whether that's really a smooth place to land, a desirable place to land.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be calling out fuel status, altitude rate. So you'll be hearing my voice quite a bit during the final landing phases.
In fact, we'll hear you more than we'll hear Dave calling all of
That's
these
right.
things out, won't we?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Is the same true during ascent, liftoff from the moon?
During the initial phase, of course, Dave's looking out the window, but after we have pitch over, and that's a very spectacular scene, incidentally. We pitch over and we fly right over the rill. It'd be a beautiful view.
About how high above the rill will you be at pitch over?
We'll be about 2,000 feet
mm-hmm.
over the rill when we pitch yeah. over.
Get a good look.
It'll be a beautiful view.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we have an excellent landing model down at the Cape that we use, you know, with the LEM simulator. So we've seen these views many, many times.
What is the most challenging thing to you during this operational period of descent and liftoff as the co-pilot, as the second man who's most necessary during a successful touchdown and blastoff?
I guess the most challenging aspect is being able to detect any failures immediately and taking the proper action.
Making instantaneous judgments. Huh?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, you, as the systems watcher, you're the one who has to make those, then, really, and feed them to Dave, huh?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll be watching and listening very carefully, Jim.
I know you will.
Jim Irwin, Lunar Module Pilot, Apollo 15. Jim, you're going to be riding the most unusual gadget, probably the system which has received the most notoriety, the most publicity on Apollo 15, the rover. The Lunar Roving Vehicle, the LRV, and as I'm sure we're going to hear throughout the remainder of the Apollo program, just the rover. What do you think of this thing? I saw you the day you first got to try one of them out here in 1G on Earth. Do you feel like it's going to be a completely reliable and comfortable vehicle to move around in?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great asset to the program. It's going to enable us to move out far from the LEM, touch... Many different features, particularly at the Hadley site. It's mm-hmm. certainly a lot easier to ride than it is to walk.
Mm-hmm.
And in that connection, of course, it enables us to stay out longer based on given consumables. In other words, we use less oxygen, less water.
Mm-hmm.
It also gives us flexibility in our landing site because we have the flexibility of touching down maybe a kilometer away from our designated mm-hmm. landing site and still hit all the major points.
Mm-hmm. To what extent do you think it multiplies your capability to explore the surface? You care to make a guess as to what sort of jump mathematically?
Well, I think it probably increases it by a factor of 2 to 3.
2 to 3? About say 2 to 3 times as much material you can get, as 2 to 3 times as much area you would be able to explore.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, that will significantly amplify the capabilities of Apollos 15, 16, and 17.
Yes.
In this case, you're going to go about 7.5 kilometers away, right, down to the
yes.
front crater system. Tell us a little bit about those traverses and what you will be looking for particularly as you move along from site to site.
Well, you know, on EVA-1, we'll be moving to the south, and we'll be going down to the edge of the rill, and... we'll be stopping there. We'll be observing the rill, looking across, looking to the north and to the south.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be looking for any layering, stratigraphy that might be revealed in the walls. We'll be looking at the bottom of it, if we can, from that position, to see if there's any indication that or hints, information might lead to the formation or the origin of the rill.
Well, during this first journey over to the edge of the rill or canyon, the sun angle will be fairly low. Is reflected light going to enable you to see down into the bottom of this canyon? What's expected?
Well, we might not be able to see down into the bottom of it either because of sunlight or the fact that we just can't get close enough to the edge to look down into the
mm-hmm.
bottom. However, you know, on subsequent EVAs like EVA-3, why we do get back to the rill again up to the north, and we ought to have a better lighting condition at that time.
And that third EVA, you have a little more time to spend there on the rill edge, too.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
EVA-1, we're very pressed because we want to look at the rill, take our pictures, and collect documented samples in that area, and then move on to the front the primary objective, the Apennine Front, to get the very, very old rocks that we hope to find there.
As we've mentioned before, that is the number one exploration objective, is to sample that front.
Yes, the Apennine Front material.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are...
The fall off from the mountain escarpment, the front, the debris at the bottom of the escarpment.
Right. And it might even be possible to find bedrock, you know, rock that's in its original position, maybe a little higher on the slope. And it might even be possible to get up to it and sample it where it's in position.
You're touching on what's been a very important part of your training, and that is making geologists out of aeronautical specialists.
Mm-hmm.
And you've learned a lot about what to look for. What do you really expect? What of the Earth geologists told you are the most important things to search for in the rocks and samples that you pick up?
Well, we've had an opportunity to study the samples that have been brought back by, you know, 11, 12, and 14.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a great number of hours looking at them, so we're familiar with those. So we're looking for different types of rocks that would have come from the Apennine Front.
Mm-hmm.
We're also familiar enough with the previous rocks, so we can say, well, these rocks are the same as the previous sites.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be looking for similarities and then differences.
Mm-hmm.
So we think the training we've had has really put us in a good position to do some good observations up there and do some intelligent sampling.
This goes for all three of the excursions,
yes.
Even when you go to the secondary craters off to the north.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks very much, Jim Irwin, Lunar Module Pilot, Apollo 15. Jim, you and Dave Scott have a much more flexible spacesuit. This is one of the things which is enabling you to stay outside longer, this time up to 7 hours. You have a longer duration life support system, and you're going to be able to move around a bit more comfortably inside, aren't you? Tell us a bit about the changes, would you?
Yeah, the suit has several significant changes, we think, and probably the most significant change is the addition of a waist convolute that enables us to...
A waist convolute.
Convolute, right.
Now, that's just a more flexible
It's a flexible joint, essentially, around the waist.
So you
which
can
enables us to bend over.
Mm-hmm.
We actually bend over and pick up rocks with our hands.
Couldn't do that before, could they?
No, they couldn't bend over. They could get down and get them, but they couldn't bend over and do it.
Mm-hmm.
It also makes it much easier to sit down in the rover. It's designed for comfortable sitting.
Mm-hmm.
We have a neck convolute also, which enables us to move our head back and forth a little easier. Again, for better, more comfortable viewing on the lunar surface. The design of the suit enables the legs to be a little closer together, which should make walking a little easier, maybe perhaps more natural on the surface. So we're very pleased with the new suit design.
Mm-hmm. And how about the extended range or the extended duration of the environmental support you have there on your back?
Well, that's great because we can go out and we figure with 7 hours of time to spend out on the lunar surface, we can really concentrate on geology. And we won't be quite as pressed to get back to the lunar module.
This is something a lot of people have asked us about, and I know there's a lot of interest in it. You're going to go as far as 7.5 kilometers away from the spacecraft. Describe the safety, redundant features involved in both the rover and the backpacks that'll help you assure a safe return.
Well, as far as the rover's concerned, we have two batteries. We have a drive system on each wheel. It's four-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
We have steering on all four wheels. And so we have the flexibility there, of turning one off if it should overheat or should fail.
Mm-hmm.
We have a navigation system.
To help you find your way back.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. To guide you back.
It'll guide us out, too, to the specific points that we want to visit.
You'll also have the rover tracks back, won't you?
Right.
On the surface.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we think we're in good shape on the rover. As far as planning for contingencies, if the rover should fail for some reason on our EVAs, we're always within walk-back distance. If something should fail within our portable life support system, our backpack. We have the capability of plugging into our buddy's water system for cooling.
Mm-hmm.
And then we could, of course, ride back or come in closer to the Lambda to do our work.
Mm-hmm. This buddy system, this is some connecting hoses from by which one astronaut may plug into the unit of the other.
That's right.
During the walk back, say.
Mm-hmm. So there's walk back or ride back.
Right. Mm-hmm. Either way.
Mm-hmm.
So there's enough redundancy to reduce any danger margins as far as you're rambling out so far away from the mother ship and that safe environment inside.
Yeah, we feel very comfortable about all the margins that have been planned in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Jim, thanks very much. Jim Irwin, Lunar Module Pilot, Apollo 15. Jim, would you describe what's new in the Apollo Scientific Experiments package this time? Now, we've heard a lot about some of the experiments. What are the innovations on Apollo 15?
Well, we have basically the same ALSEP scientific station. It was deployed by Apollo 12, but we have some significant additions to that. We have the laser reflector. We have 300 reflectors, which makes it three times as large as anything deployed so far. So we'll have a network of laser reflector stations on the moon. Then while I'm putting up the smaller scientific packages, Dave will be busily engaged in the heat flow experiment, where he'll be drilling two holes about 10 feet deep in the lunar surface. He'll be putting a heat sensor
into each of these
holes for the heat flow experiment. And this is going to give the scientists a great deal of information on heat flow.
Mm-hmm. Down under the surface.
Under the surface. Heat flow out as well as into the moon.
How the sun's energy is absorbed and how the moon's ambient heat is...
True. Whether the moon is still a hot body.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be able to extrapolate this information, hopefully, to the core or the moon.
Well, we'll have the familiar seismometer for Dr. Gary Latham again, won't we?
Yes. Yeah.
That'll give him his third sight, hopefully. That's exciting.
So we'll really have a good network of stations when you consider the 11 and the 12 site and the 14.
Where will the scientific station be set up?
We'll be setting that up about 300 to 500 feet to the west of the landing site.
Over 100 meters west, toward the rill.
Toward the rill.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be looking for a fairly smooth area where we can set up the station, and Dave will be drilling the holes for the heat flow experiment.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, Jim, for describing the science package. Jim, as you conduct your excursions, in addition to all of the sampling, you will be doing extensive photography. You do have a camera attached to the front of your suit, don't you?
Yeah, each one of us has a 70-millimeter camera attached. We're also carrying another Hasselblad with a 500-millimeter lens for high-resolution photography.
And you're pretty well turning over the TV camera operation to the Earth by remote control this time, with a camera mounted on the rover after you get moving.
That's true. We hope that will save time. Plus, the ground will be able to direct the camera in on our activities, and everyone will be able to participate in the exploration with us.
Mm-hmm. Good luck throughout the flight, Jim Irwin, and we'll be listening very carefully to you all the way.
Thank you.
Jim Irwin, Lunar Module Pilot, Apollo 15.